The Baseball Today podcast is presented by Travelocity. Travelocity's new top secret hotels makes Travelocity.com the best place for hotel deals.
This is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
Baseball was a funny game. It was a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there, welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Wednesday, April 14th, 2010. I am Eric Carabel behind the glass. Actual glass, because I'm in Bristol, Connecticut today, is Jay Soderberg. And let's not waste any time. It's our Wednesday guest. He's going to be here every Wednesday, I think. And it's Mark Simon from Baseball Tonight Research and a really good guy. Mark, welcome again.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Now, Mark is much better prepared for today's show than I am, so I'm just going to kind of let him talk a lot. Mark, I know that, and this is going to be weird for people who are only going to want to listen to baseball, but the hockey playoffs start tonight.
Yep.
And I'm a Philadelphia Flyers fan, and they, of course, are playing the New Jersey Devils and Marty Brodeur, their Hall of Fame goalie. And you apparently have a big piece running in ESPN New York about Mariano Rivera versus Marty Brodeur, and I just can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, it's really kind of it's amazing when you look at it and you look at how their careers have essentially paralleled each other right from the very start. Rivera and Brodeur, their career ERAs right now are as you take Rivera's career ERA, you take Brodeur's career goals against average. Brodeur's 2.21, Rivera's 2.25, so that's a near match. Brodeur has the 3 Stanley Cup titles. Rivera has the 5 rings. He got his 5th ring, so now he's essentially 2 ahead of Brodeur when he was 1 ahead of Brodeur for a while, and now you could almost say, all right, Brodeur is due for another. Both guys went through the same thing early in their careers. They had the issue where they gave up the really big, in Rivera's case, he gave up the really big home run as a closer that first year in 1997. Sandy Alomar Jr. hits the home run off him. Brodeur's first year as a goalie, he gives up the goal in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals to Stefan Matteau. They both rebound from that. Brodeur the next year wins the Cup. Rivera wins the World Series the next 3 years, gets the final out of all 3 games.
I like it.
Vezina trophies for Brodeur? 4. Rolaids relief awards for Rivera? 4. I think that it's pretty cool how many different parallels there are. And it's just the other kicker is, I asked some of our writers who are out in the field, Brodeur knows Mariano Rivera very well. He's familiar with all of his accolades. Rivera knows that Brodeur is a hockey player and that he's good. But I think if you said to him, you know, Martin Brodeur is the U of hockey, I think Mariano would have a little bit better picture of where Martin Brodeur stands in things.
And no Cy Young awards for Mariano Rivera.
Yeah.
But he's probably been deserving.
But 4 Rolaids relief awards.
Well, that's terrific. Actually, I would have thought it would be more than 4.
Yep.
But 529 career saves, obviously an awesome player, and I just hope that Brodeur does not add another Stanley Cup ring this season, because in the first round I want him to lose.
Yep.
Okay, back to pure baseball.
Sure.
Let's talk about the Plus family of stats. We're going to talk a lot of stats here on Wednesdays, and there's something called ERA Plus, and there's OPS Plus, and I know what those things are, but I'm guessing a lot of people don't. Like, for example, I mean, if you look, and I keep using Baseball Reference because I think it's the best place to go.
Sure.
I mean, they have those plus stats. Last year, Rivera had an ERA of 1.76. ERA plus was 2.44. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, it's pretty simple, and I think we might have a question with this stuff that's kind of later on in the show. But it's really simple. You take what your statistic is at the time, and you look at what the average was in that particular year. For example, if you had a 4 ERA and the league average ERA was 3, all right, you're essentially 4 divided by 3, and that's 1.33. You're essentially a third better than the average player in that particular year. It's that simple. The adjustments are made. The reason that they call it adjusted is they look at the ballpark in which you played most of the season, essentially your home ballpark. And if you played in a park that favors the hitter for an offensive stat, that'll take your adjusted stat down. If you played in a park that favors a pitcher, that'll take your statistics up. Essentially, you're trying to neutralize everything both across eras and across ballparks. So what it allows you to do is it essentially allows you, if you look at OPS and you see Matt Holliday has this incredible OPS, and his OPS is better than someone like Hank Aaron. You take OPS plus, and you look at Holliday when he played, where he played, against Aaron when he played, where he played, Aaron comes out much better. You look at just OPS, Holliday comes out significantly better, so it's kind of a weakness in the stat. It's not a bad stat to look at if you're looking essentially at, if you're trying to, I guess, get a feel for a hitter, but if you want to really take it to that next step, you look at the plus stat, and you do that for, you can do that for ERA too. A pitcher has a 4 ERA in a year where the average ERA is 3. That's not as good as a 4 ERA in a year in which the average ERA is, you know, 3.5.
And I like the stat because it takes into account, yes, the year.
Yep.
Also takes into account ballparks. I'm looking now at the career leaders for adjusted ERA. Mariano Rivera is so far ahead of everybody else. But there's actually a name I never heard of on here, and I'm a big baseball historian. Pedro Martinez is number 2. I've heard of him.
Yep.
Number 3 is Jim Devlin. What do you know about Jim Devlin?
Oh, boy, you're really going to put me out to the
No, you shouldn't know.
Here.
I didn't know.
Well, hang on. Jim Devlin's one of these 19th century guys.
Yeah, 1875 to 1877, his ERA was 190. And, in his final year, he was 35-25. Led the league in losses twice, but he's third all-time in adjusted ERA, which I guess tells you a lot.
He also, he also pitched probably underhand and pitched in an era where they were probably counting like 8 or 9 balls for a walk.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I actually, hits were counted differently back then too, weren't they?
Yeah, there's a little diciness when you get into the business of the 1870s. I wouldn't necessarily compare Mariano Rivera to
the 1870s.
So. If you want to compare Mariano Rivera though, to some of the other closers, I mean, you said it yourself, he's way, 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 way. It's ridiculous how far ahead he is of everybody else.
Among active pitchers, Trevor Hoffman, 8th in adjusted ERA. Yoan Santana tied for 11th with Roger Clemens. How about that? And the name here, the other name, Roy Oswalt, tied with Grover Cleveland Alexander.
Yeah, you know what it does, too? It takes something like the Bob Gibson 1.12 ERA in 1968,
exactly.
And you can put that up against the Pedro's best seasons, and you'll see that Pedro comes out farther ahead of Gibson, because that 1968 season, everyone had good ERAs. But the years that Pedro put up these great ERAs, nobody did.
It ranks 7th all-time in single-season ERA, Bob Gibson's 1968. Yes. Pedro's 2000 is 2nd to Tim Keefe in 1880. All right, let's just go right to birthdays, why don't we? And I was looking at the list of birthdays, and there were a bunch of active players, which I thought was very interesting. I mean, not stars, but Kyle Farnsworth, Greg Zahn, Adam Russell, Josh Whitesell, Brad Ausmus. Then I got to a name here, and I'm going to ask you what you feel about this, too. Look, Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, baby.
Sure.
Most hits all time, not even close. I understand why he's not in the Hall of Fame. I respect the decision, though I don't really like any commissioners anymore. But most hits all time, he's got to be in the Hall of Fame. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday, Pete Rose. Hey, he got my team a World Series title in 1980, so I'm happy with him.
I actually did some preparation right before we came on here, and I looked. How did Pete Rose do on his birthday?
Really?
And the result kind of surprised me. First of all, I hope I'm not overlooking some sort of religious aspect or something, but he didn't play a lot on his birthday. He played, what, 24 years in the major leagues?
24 seasons.
He only played on his birthday 10 times. I'm wondering if there just weren't games those days or what the deal was. He went 8 for 39, 205 batting average.
That's bad.
That's not good at all.
That's very interesting. I can't think of any religious reason. And he played, you know, almost every game
and most of
those years.
The kicker to it is that yesterday in baseball history was the day that Rose got his first hit and his 4,000th hit.
That's very interesting. How old is he? He is 69 years old.
He's old. It's amazing, you know, for us, we're probably in the same age range, to think back to when we were kids and how now all these guys are in their 60s and 70s. It's kind of freaky to...
Well, I'm only 22 years old. I don't know about you. Yeah, really. Anyway, happy birthday to all those guys. Also, Dave Justice's birthday?
Yeah, Dave Justice and I share this distinction of having stood next to each other while the Astros were pitching a no-hitter against the Yankees.
Is that right?
Dave was broadcasting the game for ESPN with Gary Thorne, and I was working the stats for them. And I think it was like his second or third ever game doing a broadcast for ESPN. So he was a little bit, I think, bewildered by what was going on with the no-hitter and all the craziness because they used the 6 pitchers in that game.
Well, speaking of no-hitters and close to it, why don't we move on to the next segment and we're going to talk about something that happened on Tuesday night. It's Around the Diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go Around the Diamond.
All right, now, I mean, I know who Ricky Romero is. I knew who he was before he became a major leaguer last season. And I got to be honest, his minor league numbers weren't very good. So when Ricky Romero was promoted by the Blue Jays last April, I was thinking, well, this guy's going to get pounded. And his first half ERA was 3, and then his second half ERA was 5.54. And last night against the Chicago White Sox, he went into the eighth inning with a no-hitter, gave up a homer to Alex Rios. But 12 strikeouts over 8 innings is really good. I don't know what to say about Ricky Romero. I've been talking about him from a fantasy aspect all day today, but I don't know if, I don't think he's going to be very good this season. What do you think?
He was very, the thing that I think that you would like about him and that would make you think that he will be good this year is he was really efficient yesterday. He had, his pitch count was low throughout the game. And normally when you strike out 12 or 13 guys, your pitch count tends to run high. It runs in the, you know, in the high, 110s, 120s, but he was pretty low the whole game. The reason for that was because he had what I referred last night after our talking to some of our analytics guys as a Santana-esque changeup. His changeup was fantastic. He threw it 23 times last night. He got 5 strikeouts with it. Guy swung and missed it. Essentially, if you've swung at it, you only had a 1/3 shot of even making contact in any way. He basically buried you with the changeup once he got to 2 strikes. We ran a rip of all the strikeouts on Baseball Tonight, and every single one was either changeup down in the dirt, curveball down in the dirt. Hitters were chasing the whole game. I think the White Sox were kind of befuddled by just how good he was. J.P. Ricciardi had a lot of good things to say about him last night. The guy was on a national championship team in college in California. I forget which one it was off the top of my head. But he showed some good stuff last year, and he basically has to be the ace because they don't have anyone now with the trade of Halliday. And he's stepped up and taken the ball in the first 2 games. He's looked great.
Final numbers. What do you think he'll end up at?
How about, because it's the Blue Jays, I'm figuring 11 or 12 wins max.
Okay.
He'll probably be the winningest pitcher on the team. I would say ERA 3.8 to 4.1, somewhere in there.
All right.
And he's striking out a batter an inning so far in the 2 starts. Last year he struck out about 7 per 9. That's pretty good for a young guy. I would say if he can maintain that, I would say he's going to have a decent season.
On TV today, I said 150 strikeouts, 12 wins, and 4.25 ERA.
So okay, you're a little higher than me.
Well, yeah, a little higher. But, you know, let's see what happens when
sure.
He faces better offenses. Also in the American League last night, I don't know how Zach Greinke is going to win double-digit games unless he basically does it himself. They had a 5-0 lead into the 7th inning, and then all of a sudden the bullpen gave up 6 runs. Poor Kansas City. Nice for Detroit. But still, it's gonna be tough. Yankees win their first game at Yankee Stadium this season, get their rings, they hug Hideki Matsui, and then Rivera comes in after David Robertson gives up a Bobby Abreu grand slam. Jeter homers, Nick Johnson homers, Rays beat the Orioles in extra innings, and then later in the night, somebody named Doug Fister and David Arzma combined on a 3-hitter. The Oakland-Seattle games, honestly, I don't know who's ever going to score. I mean, basically, you score first, you're going to win those games. Those teams just aren't going to produce enough offense.
Yeah, Seattle in particular. Seattle's done nothing. They had a 20-inning scoreless drought, and they were able to end that last night.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them to score. In the National League last night, Clayton Kershaw didn't look great. He just has to pitch deeper into games, but they scored so many runs against Ian Kennedy, who was one of my sleepers this year. The entire outfield homered for the Dodgers, which Ramirez, Ethier, and Kemp, that had happened once before among that threesome, and I think what it had been 23 years since.
Yeah, since the home opener.
Since who was it that did it in a home opener 23 years ago?
It was Marvell Wynn, Tony Gwynn, and John Kruk.
That's right, for the Padres.
The kicker for that is that it was the first 3 batters of the game.
Was it really?
Yes. And it happened 23 years ago yesterday.
So it's 23 years to the day.
Yes, exactly.
In a home opener.
Kruk didn't remember much, but he did remember that Steve Garvey was the 4th hitter. And I didn't check this, but he insists he flied out deep to the wall and just missed a 4th straight home run.
Well, if Kruk said it must be true. Reds meet the Marlins and Extras. Mets, nice outing there for John Main. You know a lot about the Mets. And I don't want to keep picking them, so I'll just let you do it. How's this team going to contend if they have only one starting pitcher worth anything?
I think I said that on this show last week.
Well, I want you to say it every week.
Yeah,
I mean, how can John Mean keep his job in the rotation?
It's a problem. Manuel has come out and said that, this next start for him, he might not get it. I don't know who they give it to. That's the problem. The issue for the Mets is their backup plans at this point aren't really good. And they dumped Nelson Figueroa, who probably would have been the ideal guy to give the John Mean spot to. He had a good spring. But they let him go. His dad buys a brick at Citi Field on that fan walk where you can essentially, when you're walking into the park, you can read the bricks that are on the concrete below you. His dad bought a brick commemorating Nelson's first Met win at Citi Field, and then the team goes off and dumps him, and the Phillies wind up picking him up. The Mets are in a lot of trouble. They might come back from this road trip, with two wins. I mean, that's where they are right now. They're 2-5. They got two more with the Rockies, and then they have the fun of facing the Cardinals in three games, and they get both Carpenter and Wainwright on Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah, good luck there.
Yep.
Who's pitching against Wainwright on? Who would that be? The today
on
starter?
Sunday? It'd probably be John Maine. And actually, the kicker on that game is that it will be the first time that Wainwright has faced the Mets in a regular season game since strike three to Beltran in 2006 in Game 7.
How's that possible?
That didn't make any sense to me either. I looked it up like six times yesterday, and I'm actually going to try and look it up again while we're still talking. The thing that we wanted to focus on with Wainwright was the idea that he strikes out Beltran, and that pitch essentially changes his career because he's a cocky young closer at that point, and he's trying to establish himself. He had two saves in 61 games. He was the emergency guy because of his Isringhausen. Next year, he enters the rotation. He's pretty good. Year after that, he enters the rotation. He's in the rotation. He's pretty good. Last year, he establishes himself as one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he establishes essentially that he has the best curveball in baseball. And his deal is, I'm going to throw this pitch with two strikes, and I can tell you that it's coming, and you're still not going to hit it. That's how good his hook is at this point. And I think the reason for that is because he struck out Beltran to end Game 7. He's like, if Carlos Beltran couldn't hit my curveball in that spot, I can throw the curveball anytime I want. I'm going to beat you with it. He's pitched against the Mets twice in his career. He's never started against them. Last time was Game 7 in 2006. I just looked it up again.
Okay, your memory's a little bit scary. I mean, it's great stuff.
Yep.
Wow. That's, okay.
I've had a couple of experiences where people have said that to me this week.
Well, no, it's a good thing. It's a great thing for this show.
It is.
Other news briefly going around the majors. Jacoby Ellsbury unlikely to play before Friday. Red Sox will be fine in his absence. Cliff Lee, they're still looking at May 1st for him. Jimmy Rollins, I expect maybe minutes after this show, will hit the disabled list. And a surprise DL stint for Brian Fuentes, the Angels closer. All of you in fantasy leagues, Fernando Rodney would be that guy, and I'm watching Jay right now. Scuffle around trying to pick up Fernando Rodney. Okay, that's about it. And good luck with Fernando Rodney if you get him. That's it for the news. Lots of emails today, and we're just going to leave Mark here for the whole time. It's time for Call to the Pen.
Call to the Pen. You've got email.
We do, and you can send your emails to baseballtoday@espnradio.com, and we'll get to at least three per day, and I think we'll get more today. First up, and this is a stat question for you, Bruce in Thailand. Adrian Beltre currently has a higher batting average than an on-base percentage. I was wondering how that is possible. My guess is that he tried to turn a single into a double and got thrown out. No. Thereby getting credit for a hit, but not for a time on base. No. Combine that with zero walks, and there you go. This is just a guess. Please explain. Also, could we have a small celebration for Beltre when he finally draws his first walk of the season? That's Bruce in Thailand. You know what? A lot of people don't know how a batting average can be higher than on base, but I'm guessing you know pretty easily.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Adrian Beltre has one sacrifice fly. When you factor that in, you essentially are the numerator, denominator. The denominator is different for batting average than it is for on base percentage. Batting average, you're looking at bats. On base percentage, you're looking at a broader scope, and you're including sacrifice flies. And it's always bothered me that you don't include sacrifice flies in batting average. It's not like you're purposely giving yourself up by hitting a fly ball. You're trying to get a hit. It's not like bunting, but they don't count that. So he has 24 at bats, 25 plate appearances, and thus he's 9-for-24 batting average wise. And 9-for-25 with the sacrifice fly thrown in,
right,
on base percentage wise. So he's .375 batting, .360 on base. As for when he's going to get his first walk, if we set May 15th as the approximate date, that seems about right. He had 19 walks last year in 449 at bats.
He's not a big walker.
No.
I think we know that. But essentially, on base goes to plate appearances, and batting average goes to at bats. And we see that quite a bit this early in the season. Guys who can have, and generally it's a lot of these catchers.
Yeah, you know what? I think you have Kirchen on tomorrow. Talk to him about this whole issue because Tim Kirchen loves the sacrifice fly. He is a sacrifice fly junkie. In fact, I think it says it on his Wikipedia page that he is a sacrifice fly addict. And it, I think he would have an interesting perspective on it for you.
Really? A sack fly addict?
Yeah.
Not sure I want him on the show knowing that, but that's pretty good. I never knew there was a sack fly addict.
Yep.
Bruce, there's your answer, and it's good stuff. Guy is up next. I want to weigh in your discussions on some of the newer versus older stats in baseball. My dad is a purist who looks at batting average, slugging, home runs, RBIs, etc. Well, I like to look at everything. I was making a case for OPS being a good indicator of a well-rounded hitter by showing him the top five all-time OPS leaders on baseballreference.com. He couldn't argue with any of those names, but he pointed out that as you go down the list, you find yourself scratching your head from time to time at players who either shouldn't be there and are, or should be there and aren't. I think that walks might influence the statistic too much to reflect the hitter's real production. For instance, Matt Holliday is number 33, while Hank Aaron is number 39.
Yeah.
The great Roberto Clemente is number 218, behind Alfonso Soriano and ahead of Adam LaRoche. How much stock do you put in OPS? I'll ask you that, Mark. OPS, how much does it matter? And it's that is odd. Hank Aaron, 39.
Yeah, that essentially goes back to what we were talking about before with the OPS Plus.
Right. Adjusted OPS, he does much better.
Yeah, essentially, I would say if you're going to use it kind of, I guess you would use it to compare players on the same team. For example, you would compare when Matt Holliday was with the Rockies, compare Matt Holliday to Todd Helton in that particular season, because they're essentially working in the same ballpark under the same set of circumstances. If you're going to compare players across era, go to the Plus family of stats, which we talked about earlier, and definitely go to Baseball Reference is by far the best source for the Plus data. Go there, take a look, and you'll see that when you incorporate the era that the guy played in, Hank Aaron rates above Matt Holliday, Roberto Clemente does a lot better than he does in OPS. OPS is a good starting point. Take it to the next level and go to one of the Plus stats.
Yeah, and in adjusted OPS, Hank Aaron is tied for 22nd with Joe DiMaggio, Mel Ott, and Manny Ramirez.
It's a big difference from where he was before.
Yeah, I mean, look, all these stats, you can make of them what you want. I mean, earlier on the show with Ricky Romero, I don't know what to make of his stats.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's just you're just trying to figure out what a guy's going to do. But, yes, Guy, to answer your question, any stat you look at, you're going to see some odd things, and that.
Especially early in the season, by the way. We got lots of good small sample size quirks at this point.
All right, I'm getting a lot of grief here about the Toronto Blue Jays, so let's ask the question here from John in Toronto. I detect a bit of sarcasm from Eric when he mentions the Toronto Blue Jays. I thought it was just baseball common sense. They're rebuilding.
Don't you know sarcasm when you hear it?
First time we've heard that in a while. They are rebuilding and certainly not expected to do much this season. But after that discussion yesterday about Kansas City Philly in 1980, I'm wondering if maybe Eric isn't harboring some lingering 1993 Jays Phillies resentment. Mark, I don't know if you heard the show when I interviewed Rob Nyer. Which was yesterday. Yeah, it was Tuesday. And Rob has had an anti-Phillies bias forever. Okay, it's in his chats, it's in his writing. He admitted it on the show live. He said, yeah, you know, I have something against the Phillies, and it is because in 1980, I told him I had a photo of Dickie Knowles putting George Brett on his hemorrhoids, and he laughed. Anyway, no. To answer John's question here, I have no harboring ill will towards the 1993 Jays-Phillies World Series because it was just all Mitch Williams' fault. It was actually Jim Fregosi's fault. Mitch had nothing left. And actually, I find it interesting. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, but my wife actually went into labor when John Kruk got a single in the first inning of Game 1 of the World Series in 1993. Her water broke at the kitchen table when Kruk hit a base hit single up the middle to score a run. And I told Kruk this, and he couldn't have cared less. He, like, I have talked to him 100 times over the years, and he was like, really? He, like, felt uncomfortable, I think, about it. But anyway, that's what happened, and I ended up missing the rest of the game. But I guess it was worth it. But to answer the question, there's more here. Chances are we won't see the Blue Jays repeat of that World Series this year with the Phillies, but it's probably safe to lay off the Jays as an ironic powerhouse talk and give them kudos for fine raw pitching talent and a potentially exciting next few seasons. I got a lot of tweets and emails when Romero was pitching that no-hitter last night. And look, I have nothing against the Blue Jays. And the power rankings on Monday, Mark, I did not have Toronto in my top 10. Would you have Toronto as one of your top 10 teams right now?
No, I got to see them do it against the opposition that they're going to face in the American League East. And don't tell me that Baltimore counts, because Baltimore doesn't count based on what we've seen so far.
Yes.
The Orioles bullpen has imploded multiple times. I gotta see a lot more, I think, before I buy in. They play the Rays and the Red Sox for 6 starting April 23rd. I think you'll get your best gauge of them then. If they can somehow go 3-3 in those 6, all right, I'll be a little bit more of a believer. Maybe you take me up from 10% to 20%. But if they go 1-5 in those six games, then isn't it just like, I think it was last year, they essentially started off pretty well, too. When they, if they can get wins against the Yankees, Red Sox, and Rays, I'll buy in. But if they're just getting wins against the rest of the American League, it's not close. And they did start, by the way, 6-2 last season and then finished 75-87. So 8 games does not a season make.
And I am not rooting against them, but I'm glad that you said it, Mark. You're making me look a little better here. Look, let's see a month. Let's see a month, all right? And even probably more for them. But they're not going to win the division.
No.
They're not going to be, and unless they keep, even if they're like 10-2, I guess I'd have to put them in the power rankings next Monday.
I'll acknowledge the idea that in 2 years they could be good.
And I agree, and I think Baltimore too. I like the young pitching for Baltimore. And with Toronto, Ricky Romero, I don't think he has quite the upside of a Brian Mattis or a Chris Tillman, but he should be good enough to be a number three starter for the next 5-7 years, right?
It's essentially they're setting themselves up for, a position in which they can spend a little bit. They've gone to more of an analytic, statistical approach with the GM that they brought in to replace JP, and they hired. There have been a couple of articles, if you Google them, about them hiring some statistical consultants to try and figure out a way that they can win the way that the Rays have.
All right, all fair enough there. And again, I have no bias against any team, so I like how people try to say that, but it's just not true. That's Call to the Pen. You can send your emails to baseballtoday@espnradio.com, and we'll get to 3 per day.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchup.
This is The View from Third.
All right, we got 15 games on the schedule, which means a full house of games, which I love. On Tuesday, there were 9 games. Tomorrow, there's 12. 15 games today. There should be 15 games every day. All right, what am I watching for today? I just get a little excited. Angels-Yankees, obviously, is something to always watch. The Red Sox-Twins game, I want to see what Kevin Slowey does against that team. But later in the night, or later in the day in the American League, David Price against Baltimore. David Price's first couple starts, his ERA is 3.52. I think this can be a big winner. What are your expectations for David Price this season?
I think if the Rays are going to challenge the Red Sox and the Yankees, they need him to win probably 13, 14 games this year. They need him to take that next step up. I don't know how many innings he's going to get, though. He had 128 last year, so you figure you're probably looking at a guy who, I don't want to say he's necessarily going to be Jabba-ized like the Yankees did last year, but I'm sure they're going to manage him pretty careful. That said, they did give him 7 2/3 on opening day, and he's striking out a batter an inning, didn't give up any home runs, allowed 7 hits. I would expect I had Romero at 3.8 to 4.1. I would have Price in the 3.6 to 3.8 range ERA, and I think the upside might be a little higher there.
I think the upside is definitely higher, and I have not heard that the Rays would limit his innings. I could see him pitching 200 innings. I think this is a key year for the Rays. They almost have to.
Yeah, he did start in the minor leagues last year.
I think he can handle a 200-inning workload. Also, later in the American League, A's, Mariners, Gio Gonzalez. Interesting guy. If the Athletics are going to stick around in this race, Gio Gonzalez, who probably wasn't supposed to be in the rotation, is a guy who I'd like to see what he can do. In the National League, you have any thoughts on Gio Gonzalez? Good young lefty, right?
Good. The A's seem to be loaded with those guys. Anderson gave them another really good start last night.
In the National League, the big game is on ESPN2 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. The Houston Astros, the winless Houston Astros at St. Louis Cardinals with Brad Penny on the mound against my old friend Brett Myers. Astros are 0-7, second worst start in team history. They've scored 13 runs in 7 games. Can you put any perspective in the beginning for this season for Houston?
Yeah, basically, Albert Pujols is better than they are at this point.
Well.
They've done nothing offensively. They haven't. There are certain statistical measures. There's an inside edge tracks well hit average, which is essentially them making a judgment call on each ball, whether or not it's hard hit or not. And there's admittedly some judgment to that, but they're way below the league average in that. I looked this up before because I was doing a post for the Mets thing on ESPN New York. Their cleanup hitters have an OPS of like 270. And that's how bad it is. Carlos Lee's gotten off to this terrible start. Their pitching has been okay. Oswald's pitched twice. Wandy's pitched, but boy, that lineup is rough.
Doesn't scare anybody.
Kirchen was saying the other day that basically their team is a collection of utility infielders.
And they just, you know, basically said that Tommy Manziel is going to move up to the number two spot in the order. Everybody listening out there, go look up Tommy Manziel's minor league numbers. He should be hitting eighth or ninth. Shouldn't be hitting second.
That's a rough go for the manager, for Brad Mills.
First season.
It's like, all right, what have I gotten myself into here? I was a coach with the Red Sox, where we were, you know, significantly better. The owner in Houston sometimes has a tendency to have very high expectations for his team. You hope that he doesn't go a little overboard in his reaction.
By the way, Albert Pujols has 5 home runs, 14 RBI, and he's batting .407.
Yep.
Only 2 players in the post-World War II era started a season with those numbers.
Yeah, Dale Murphy's one of them. Was Willie Mays the other?
Yeah, Willie Mays is the other. Dale Murphy in 1985 and Willie Mays in 1964.
Yeah, there's like 20 really good Albert Pujols stats out there right now. He just broke the record for most home runs in first 10 seasons of career. He's still got, you know, 9/10 of the season, more like 19/20 of the season,
season
to go.
Yeah, he's going to shatter
it. So he's going to put some distance on that one. He's now, as my boss pointed out, he's Hall of Fame eligible.
That's right. Yes. I did say that after our show last Wednesday. So on last Thursday's show, your boss, Jeff Bennett, actually emailed me directly. And I said, yes, I was wrong. And props to you and props to Jeff.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Bobby Valentine did a big thing. And I think they're going to either replicate it tonight or replicate it on Sunday night about how Albert Pujols has the approach of a pyramid when he stands at the plate. And I can't do it justice the way that you need to explain it, but basically the positioning of his body as he approaches the ball is structured like a pyramid, which is essentially the world's strongest structure.
I actually saw that last night, I think, on SportsCenter.
You already saw it?
I did.
Well, don't ruin it for everybody else.
Sorry.
I think if you want to check it out, I think they're going to do it either tonight or on Sunday night's game with the John and Joe on the call.
Okay. Well, I will be watching that. Everybody should be watching that. Whenever there's baseball on ESPN or one of the family networks, everybody should be watching. Also in the National League, Jonathan Sanchez is going. Chris Volstadt, who I thought would be good but doesn't look good, against Homer Bailey, who I didn't think would be good and hasn't been good. And John Neese for the Mets, that'll solve things. Tommy Hansen, you want to see a good young starter. Check out at 10 o'clock when Tommy Hansen pitches at San Diego. Could be a shutout anytime he pitches in San Diego.
Can I give you one thing to watch tonight?
Sure.
Just from we have a guy that puts out this Baseball Today document, and I was helping him a little bit this morning. Leadoff hitters this year have been hideous through this first stretch of games. Jimmy Rollins got off to a real good start, but now he's hurt. There are, I think it's 13 different guys that are everyday number one hitters for a team who have an on-base below 200. So that's essentially like half the league at this point. The on-base percentage for leadoff guys so far this year matches about what the on-base percentage is for guys that hit seventh in the lineup, which really makes no sense. And it's, again, one of those things that you have fun with small sample sizes. So I would say watch your number one hitter in the lineup today and see if some of them start to pick up the slack a little bit.
That's very interesting. That sounds like something I should write about. I had no idea. I mean, that could obviously lower the RBI totals for guys who bat second, third, and fourth.
Yep.
Something to watch there. I don't know what the Phillies are going to do without Jimmy Rollins. I do not want to see Juan Castro play every day. Something else I said on yesterday's show, I'll be brief now because I know we're in overtime, but I said Albert Pujols is on pace, I think, to end up as the second best baseball player of all time, and obviously I got emails about that. I think Babe Ruth will always be number one. I don't see how anybody can ever beat him, as good as Bonds was, as good as Pujols is. What would you say to that?
I think that that's a reasonable take to have. You know, there had to be some skeptics at the end of last year when he went through that real long power stretch. The one thing that might concern you is that every so often he hints at issues with his back. And if anything's going to shorten his career, it would be back issues. If he can somehow get through back issue free for a 5 to 10 year stretch, he's going to be, you know, a 750 home run guy. He's going to be a mega RBI guy because the Cardinals will always surround him with pretty good talent. And he's going to, you know, until the eye starts to go and the reaction time starts to go, he's going to be a 320, 330 hitter every year. I think it is hard to beat Babe Ruth. I think, you know, when all is said and done, you could reasonably say that he belongs in the discussion.
in the discussion, but would you wouldn't put anybody ever against Ruth?
No,
right?
I think as a sentimental historian, I'll put Babe Ruth and maybe Ted Williams ahead of him.
All right, I agree with that. And so I'm going to be interested to see where he ends up, but obviously he's a monster and he's 30 years old. Crazy. That's it. What a great show. Mark Simon, Baseball Tonight researcher, stuck around for the whole show. Maybe we'll do that next Wednesday, time permitting for him. Obviously, we both have other jobs. Thanks to Jay Soderberg. He chimed in. He pushed the buttons. Everything worked. Send your emails for then the next show, baseball at, what's this show called? Baseball Today at ESPNRadio.com. Well, if you don't put it on the sheet, how am I going to know? It's only my third year doing this show. Anyway, thank you to everybody for writing in. Lots of good feedback from Tuesday's show, and hopefully we'll have a lot of good feedback from today's show. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that's a wrap. I'll be back on Thursday. Adios.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.